You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton, Chief Creative Officer, on a fine, very warm Friday afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Though it's supposed to get colder this weekend. There's going to be a front of cold air moving in. So it's going to be about 10 to 15 degrees colder than they expected.
Well, speaking of cold things, I hear there's a major new GPU announced by NVIDIA, which has some fancy cooling scheme.
Oh, yeah. So NVIDIA basically dropped the Warhammer on us. They announced the GTX 1080 and the GTX 1070 running on their new 16-nanometer FinFET Pascal architecture, which is their next-gen architecture. Super powerful, super power efficient. These cards are faster than the current flagship, the Titan X. The 1080, in fact, is 2 times faster than the Titan X and 3 times as power efficient. Meaning you can run this thing with a much cheaper power supply than you would have needed for the Titan. In fact, you only need a power supply capable of running the 980, which is huge. And here's the kicker. These cards come with 8 gigs of next generation graphics memory. 8 gigabytes.
That's insane. I think the high-end Mac Pro has maybe 6.
Yeah.
And that's 2 GPUs, I think.
Yeah. And most consumer-grade video cards have about 2 or 3 gigs right now. They've just jumped to 8.
Yeah.
And starts at $449 US.
Right. And well, they clearly need the extra memory to store all those textures.
Yeah. I mean, game engines are getting way more high res, and yeah, there's VR to consider.
Right. Which I think it sounds like maybe that's what's really driving it.
I think so. Their other big announcement as part of this was a new technology called, oh God, I've already forgotten. Basically, they've come up with a means of generating up to 16 different viewports or cameras in the game engine that can automatically correct for various display modes. For example, in a multi-monitor setup, if you have a left monitor and a right monitor, and you tilt them towards you to make the whole display look like it's wrapped around your eyes, you get a lot of distortion right now, where what would have been one long linear image is suddenly skewed to the left and the right. What this system allows the GPU to do automatically without any performance hindrance at all is correct the image on those displays to compensate for the angle, effectively turning your multi-monitor setup into a window on a 3D world.
Which is what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this also means performance boost for VR because they can automatically compensate for the lens distortion in a VR headset by automatically rendering the view as 4 separate angled viewports per eye, which when run through the lens makes them appear normal. Whereas before, VR was stretching the graphics, which forced the GPU to render more pixels, which degraded performance. Now, with this new system, it only renders as many pixels as it needs to render. Nothing is wasted. So it allows for a way more conservative use of power. In fact, they quoted that it would lead to a 40 to 50% performance boost on VR.
Wow. You know, it's really interesting. So we really do live in fascinating times, specifically for VR. And I've never seen so much innovation in this space happens so rapidly with all these different companies working so hard to improve it. And a year or two ago, I don't think I ever would have thought that we would be where we are now with VR. You know, and that to me is fascinating, that VR is really, that whole completely new experience is really driving, pushing the technology as far as the hardware is concerned to keep up with what they want to be able to do. And clearly, and I know we've touched on this a little bit in past episodes when we talked about VR. I think we've talked about VR a few times, but it's interesting how that the technology is also now enabling their creative vision to see the light of day.
Yeah, this is such a huge space right now, not just VR, but also AR with the Microsoft HoloLens. We're seeing just a massive explosion in innovation. This NVIDIA announcement is just the latest step. Like,
and you've actually used the HoloLens, have you not?
Yes, I've tried it.
Yeah, did you want to talk a little bit about that?
So the HoloLens differs from the Oculus or the HTC Vive in that instead of creating a fully virtual world that you see with your eyes, it is able to project 3D objects into the existing world. It's augmented reality, or AR, rather than VR. And it uses a little Xbox technology. There's actually a Kinect built right into it that's able to scan the room that you're in and detect certain landmarks. So it identifies things that are unique to the room. So for example, in this room, it would identify the patterns in the blankets on the wall that are dampening the sound. And as you turn your head, it knows those patterns and is able to go, okay, this side of the room is this side of the room. And when you place a hologram somewhere, it remembers where it is, so that when you turn your head back to that side of the room, it stays put. I guess the one thing right now about it is the field of view is still kind of limited. It's not quite the fully immersive experience that it should be. The screen is somewhat small. It's kind of I'd say it's a mini HDTV in front of your eyes, kind of.
And why do we have that limitation?
I'm not sure. It could be performance. It could be any number of reasons. But right now the field of view is just kind of this box directly in front of you.
Now, is that on all VR or is that just the Oculus Rift?
Like, that's the HoloLens.
Oh, the HoloLens. Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Because that's what I asked you.
Yeah. So, obviously this is version one of the tech. I'm sure down the road, it's probably going to turn into basically a pair of glasses that you wear and have a full peripheral view of everything.
I was very skeptical, as I know many others were, when I saw the video, because it's one thing to show it on a video, but it doesn't really translate well. You know, being as somebody who's actually used it, did it exceed your expectations of how you thought it would actually perform?
I'd say it met and slightly exceeded them, but my expectations were probably elevated from the average person. Like, I was expecting it to work exactly as advertised, and it did. The holograms are very smooth. The frame rate is good. It's definitely been optimized around that. It responds to hand gestures really quickly. The tracking on that is really quite good. Obviously, they'll continue to iterate, but this is a really good first step towards a huge market for augmented reality. On Microsoft's page, they've even shown a ton of companies that are already working with them to develop applications for it. I think they mentioned Audi and Volvo doing like car design apps for it. So you can put on a HoloLens and basically see a virtualization of the car that you're building instead of doing a clay model, which they do a lot right now, but imagine instead of a clay model, you put this headset on and suddenly the entire car in one-to-one scale is right in front of you. And you can even walk inside the car and see the interior rendered perfectly.
Fascinating.
Like you can just like clip through it and see what's going on inside, which you can't do with a clay model.
How far do you think we're away from the Minority Report sort of stuff? Because
we're pretty close. Like,
I mean, with HoloLens, because you can do that sort of stuff where your hand gesture activates or does has some kind of interaction.
So the primary interface is there's actually a little cursor that's tied to your head and eye movement. So as you turn your head and navigate around, that cursor becomes basically a selector for things. And then you kind of click with your forefinger and thumb in direct view of the gesture sensor. And that clicks on the object. And then from there, you can actually click and drag things to scale them. You can move them around. You can access menus, hit buttons. But the really cool gesture is the one to bring up the Windows Home menu. And that is you throw your hand up from a closed fist to kind of an open palm expression that's facing upward. And the menu sort of appears directly above your hand.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That's like Tony Stark level stuff.
Yeah. Like it's a really incredible thing to see. And I'm hoping that we get to a commercial version sooner than later. I don't know, how long it's going to take.
So is this something only developers can get access to?
For now, yes. You can buy the development kit for $3,000 or is it $5,000?
Why would they charge that much for it?
Well, because right now it is a big piece of equipment. It's not something that your average person is going to want to wear all the time. And the idea is it's really for coming up with these big idea things to like basically seeing what AR can accomplish, what can be done with it in these spaces. So, I mean, right now it's kind of a barrier to entry. A little bit, like,
but it sounds like maybe they did that on purpose to weed out people that are not serious about like taking the medium seriously,
exactly,
with the intention of making something.
Yeah. So I mean, that price tag isn't so much this device costs $3,000 to make. It costs $3,000 because we want you to actually be serious about building things for this device.
Wasn't the Oculus Rift developer kit? I mean, I don't think it was that expensive, but I think it was...
No, it was like around 500. I think it was around 500 to start.
For some reason.
No, it might have been. I don't actually remember. Yeah. I'm sure one of our viewers might
correct
us.
Google Glass was over $1,000.
Yes, the Google Glass Developer Edition was a lot of money. Not quite as much as this, but it was a lot lower tech. I mean,
Did you wear HoloLens in the shower?
No. No, I did not.
Well, I applaud you. I applaud you, sir.
Yeah, it's quite something. If you ever get the opportunity to try it, and I hope it kind of expands so that more people can try it, absolutely go for it. It's amazing. It's like VR, but just so much different from VR. Like,
well, it's a big headset that you wear, right? Like, covers your head, doesn't it?
It doesn't entirely cover your head.
Is it anything like the Oculus Rift?
No, it's more like a heavier version of Jordy's visor.
Okay.
More or less. And there's kind of this plexiglass thing in front of your eyes that includes the little projection screen that the device renders everything on. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but it basically beams the image directly into this optical thing in front of you, and it makes it look as if things are actually far away, so there's some 3D involved.
Sounds like sorcery to me.
Yeah, it kind of is a little bit. But the development kit is quite cool. You can actually just make a regular Windows 10 app and have it work in HoloLens. It'll just appear as a floating window. So I actually got to try Microsoft Edge browser in HoloLens. I just literally threw a web page at the wall.
That sounds amazing.
And it stayed there. So I'm walking around the room doing other stuff. I look back. It's still there.
Yeah.
I can still scroll through it.
You talked about the limited, was it field of view that you said?
Yeah.
Okay. So what about the actual quality of the graphics that you were looking
okay.
at? How good did it look?
So there was a little bit of aliasing, but overall it looked quite incredible. Like it looked like these objects were actually in the room with me.
Right.
They were not quite solid, but not quite transparent either.
Let me ask you this. Did it look better? Did the effect look better than, say, if you were just, the closest analogy I can think of is just using a regular projector to project something like a PowerPoint presentation on the screen. Does it look sharper and more realistic?
Way more.
Okay, so that's
way
good.
More. Like, this is completely next level.
I'm just trying to, as somebody who's never tried VR or any of these things, I'm trying to get a sense of how vivid the images are.
So, imagine, like, for example, you put it on and you see a little dancing monkey right on this table. It's
title
slightly transparent, but not quite, and it's just sitting there. And you can see it, and it's like it's really there. I mean, it's not casting a shadow or anything, so that kind of gives it away, but, and it kind of looks a bit cel-shaded a little. But it's like it's actually occupying space. It's like there's actually something on the table, which is really impressive.
And so, obviously, they announced, like, this was, I think, a live event tonight about the new GPUs and about the Unreal Engine and what it's able to do, but looping back to Apple, because of course we have to do that because we quite frequently talk about that stuff. But I'm just thinking, it's been a while since I've ever been excited about GPU technology, because just in the mobile space, specifically in the laptop space, I'm not super excited about it. And I mean, it's not news to anybody that Apple has sort of always been a little bit behind in the GPU processing area. I mean, they've gotten a lot better. Certainly they've closed that gap, I would say, in the last 2 years, a lot more with their AMD GPUs that they've been putting in there.
Yeah.
But what is happening with these GPUs, and how does that affect Apple, and how, from a consumer's standpoint, from someone who likes to play games but doesn't play them on a computer, like what is it going to mean for the future of people that want to play games on a Mac? Are we going to see any drastic improvements?
Well, currently there's a rumor that the new MacBook Pros that come out this year, the ones that hopefully look like a MacBook, are going to use the new AMD Polaris architecture. So that's AMD's next-gen GPU, which is going to compete with what NVIDIA just announced tonight. It's not entirely clear if it'll beat it in performance or not, but it'll definitely be a huge boost to the MacBook Pro, almost certainly. I'm not sure how much, but it'll definitely pack a punch. Whether that enables better games to be run on Mac, I'm not sure. Obviously, OS X is still sort of tethered to OpenGL, so that causes a few problems in and of itself.
Yeah, wasn't Metal, as far as the API is concerned, isn't that supposed to be the savior of that problem?
Yes and
like,
no.
What happened to games on OS X with Metal? I thought we were supposed to see a slew of games optimized running butter smooth.
Well, I think game developers in general tend to ignore the Mac as a gaming platform just because Apple hasn't really been there for them for the longest time. I think given enough time, they'll start embracing metal. And given that Apple starts putting some real GPUs into their products, I think we'll start to see people come back. But it's going to take time. Like right now, the ecosystem is very sparse for gaming. It's going to take some, like Apple's going to have to actually, hold out an olive branch for gaming to kind of come back.
Well, that's where I was going to go with this. And I wanted your take on that. A, do they want to do that? And B, what is it going to take for them to do that?
I'm not sure it really concerns them. Like, I don't think they've ever really been that excited about gaming. I think their interest in gaming only goes so far as people make games for our platforms and that's cool. Like they don't really try to help it along. They don't really try to throw them a bone. They just say, well, you can do it. And yeah, like they've never really been a cheerleader for gaming on their platforms. Even iOS, gaming on iOS is basically a fluke. Like they haven't, until recently with SceneKit and Metal, they haven't really actively gone after game developers. They haven't really actively said, we want you making games on this platform. We're going to give you awesome tools to do that. So lately they've kind of turned that around, but historically, they haven't really given a shit, to be totally honest.
I think that's perfectly fair. I don't know. I might have to abandon OS X and go back to BIOS.
Well, they still have OpenGL, so you'd still be kind of out of luck there.
Hey, they can run multiple videos at the same time. And MIDI tracks at the same time. That's pretty
so
high
powerful.
Tech. So powerful.
So good. Okay. Yeah. So I'll actually be interested to see what happens at WWDC this year. While there will be a ton of improvements elsewhere, I'll be probably most interested to see if they actually do anything about gaming. Like, if they bring Epic Games up on stage and they're like, now that we have Metal on OS X and all this other stuff, here's, like, Paragon running on a Mac. Like, if they did something like that, that would basically be a sign that gaming is back for Mac.
Yeah, and I think it would take, at the very least, a AAA title to be fully implemented.
Yeah.
On Metal. And until... You know, as of the recording of this podcast, I don't think that's ever happened, right?
Not really, no.
I mean, we've had iOS games ported to the Mac.
Yeah.
But never, and we certainly, I mean, obviously we have AAA titles, but nothing that's AAA and written completely for Metal.
Yeah, most
is disappointing. I just don't get it.
Yeah, most of the AAA titles on Mac right now are actually emulated via Cider. So
is it technically difficult? Because the thing is, like, the game developers would want their games to run best on the Mac. So is it that's what makes me think that there's something that's way more time consuming about taking a game that's already built on this engine, like Unreal, and how do you, like, I don't know tech. I'm not a game developer, so I don't know what it would take.
So Unreal Engine 4 does actually have Mac as a build target. I'm not exactly sure what it takes. I think the problem really comes down to optimization. So you can build it for Mac, but that doesn't necessarily mean the frame rate is going to be great.
Right.
So if they're optimizing their game for, okay, you have 16 gigs of RAM and a GTX 1080 and whatever else, like if they're expecting that for maximum quality settings, they then have to go back and say, okay, let's pare this down. Let's get it running on all of the latest Mac devices. So they have to test it on a Mac Pro. They have to test it on variants of the MacBook Pro. They can maybe safely ignore the Air and especially the MacBook, but MacBook Pro, iMac, Mac Pro, They would have to test it on all of those various years, various spec configurations. It's not as bad as PC because Apple only gives you so many choices, but it's still additional work that they have to do. And if they're already working on a PS4 version, an Xbox One version, and a PC version at the same time, it just adds more time to the development cycle that they would rather spend optimizing the three that they're already targeting. So, I mean, Apple basically has to put themselves out there. They have to say, look, we want AAA games on our platform. We want you guys to come in and do ports to Mac. And here's what we're going to give you to enable you to do that. Like, they need to make it really easy to just take a game that's running on PC and just port it right over to Mac without a whole ton of fuss. Right now, I'm not sure how much fuss there is, but I think it's just that the hardware isn't there. Apple optimizes for power efficiency. They optimize for battery life. Where the MacBooks are concerned, they don't really optimize for raw power. And the Mac Pro, it's optimized for being a audiovisual workstation.
Right.
They don't use consumer-level GPUs. They use AMD Fire Pros, which are not technically optimized for games. They're optimized for rendering 4K video really quickly.
It is, I guess, a matter of priorities. And for Apple, it's just gaming is...
It's not high on their list, or it hasn't been.
Gaming is important, I think, on iOS. I think they take it more seriously there. But on OS X, they're just... It's tough because, like you said, they do have to optimize for battery. And that is such a key thing. It's right at the top of their list. Hmm. And they don't want to compromise on that. And I'm not saying they do, but it would be nice at the very least that we get GPUs with, like, more onboard memory. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, it always seems like Apple will take the same GPU that, say, a comparable Windows laptop would get, except that they go cheaper and ship it with less onboard RAM, when I really wish they wouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of just cheap out, and they don't really go for what would enable better game performance.
Because even if it was slightly under clock, it probably wouldn't be as big of a deal, because I know, especially modern games, they love to fill up the bus with, like, textures. Then the more textures you can load into memory, the better.
Yeah.
So why not just have gobs and gobs of memory?
Yeah. It's very odd.
It's been a while, but I remember reading an article a few years back that additional RAM on a computer can also consume additional power.
Yes.
But I don't know what kind of impact that has on battery life. So an extra 2 gigs of RAM on a GPU, would that make a difference? I don't know.
It's probably significant enough that Apple decided not to do it.
Right. Like, if it eats another 20 minutes of battery life, Apple probably just wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. They would care that their customer has 20 minutes more to use their product.
Right.
Rather than be able to play the latest game at maximum. And then, of course, the iMac. The iMac actually uses laptop chips, so it isn't really a desktop per se.
See, that's what I don't... I think that's because of the space constraints that they have, right?
Like, they make the iMac so thin now that they basically have no choice.
Right.
They have to use a laptop.
But the iMac GPU is a more powerful version of what the MacBook Pro has with more onboard memory. Just wish they would take it a little step further, because there's no battery in there. We don't need to worry about battery life.
Exactly.
You're plugged into power.
Exactly.
Yes, it means the fans would spin up a little bit more, but when you're playing a game, you kind of expect that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's like the screen is right in front of your face. So if that fan spins up really fast, you're going to hear it
fair enough,
really
fair
bad.
Enough.
So
I mean, nobody likes a noisy computer either, but no. Still.
I mean, I guess they could figure out a way to do it, but of course it all falls down to whether they care enough to do it.
And probably not.
So far they haven't.
I feel kind of pessimistic, but just I'm going based on what they've put out there, and it just doesn't seem like we'll ever get a computer with the kind of GPUs that you and I want.
Yeah,
I
don't
think that's just the reality.
Yeah, I don't think we're getting a Mac Pro with a GTX 1080 anytime soon.
No.
We'll be lucky if we get a 960
There's no point in holding your breath. If you really want that kind of performance, you just have to build a gaming PC, period.
And, I mean, that's what I ended up doing, so...
Yeah, how's that working out for you?
It's pretty great. I can run stuff at maximum on my Thunderbolt display, and it's just stunning. So that's working out pretty well.
You haven't gone 4K yet on your gaming PC?
No, because I don't think there's any point, and I really like the Thunderbolt display. All the 4K monitors look ugly as shit.
Well, yeah. The Dell monitors don't look particularly pretty, but they're really nice displays.
Nice panel, yeah, but I prefer all
You're
of it.
You're waiting for an Apple 4K display, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. You know I am. Come
well,
on,
we,
Apple.
We all are. We all are.
Come on, Apple. Give us the goods. Give us that 5K Thunderbolt display.
And
we know you have one.
Well,
I'm sure sitting in Johnny Ive's lab.
I don't know what the deal is with that.
I really don't know. Like,
it'll be $2 million when it's released.
We are way, way overdue for one.
Like, I think it's just a joke. It's a joke now.
I think so. Like, at this point, 4K monitors are around $500. And the Thunderbolt display costs $1,000. So Apple could easily sell one now for that price.
What's strange to me is that, I mean, obviously they would never pull a product before they had something else to replace it, but it would be a really stupid decision to buy a cinema display today.
Oh yeah. Do not buy one.
It is not worth that money.
No.
With the display, because the display tech is really old.
Yeah. I mean, it looks great, but yeah, it's not the tech that's in the iMacs even. Like, the iMacs are now this beautiful incel glass bonded LED.
We've had way bigger advances in, like, just viewing angles, 10-bit color, resolution.
Yeah.
Like, so many advances. Power
My iPad Pro has a more advanced panel than the Thunderbolt display. So it's like, yeah. It's about goddamn time. Give us a new Thunderbolt display already. I don't know what's stopping them. I really don't. Like, when they made the announcement that the Mac Pro could support up to 3 4K monitors, and then they didn't announce a 4K monitor, I was just like, what the hell are you doing? Because then, on the Apple Store, the only 4K monitor they had was this giant fucking Philips TV. They were selling 4K TVs rather than just come out with a new monitor.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
It's bizarre.
Maybe,
it's completely bizarre.
Maybe it is just
bizarre.
A resource issue. They just don't have enough people on it. I don't know.
The thing is, they could just... All they really need to do is make one of the new 5K iMacs, rip out all the guts... Shrink the chassis so it's just the display. Like, that's all they really need to do.
It's probably not that complicated.
Yeah. Like, it's just take the existing iMac, shrink it down to just the panel, done. That's all we really need. And it's been years now, and we haven't gotten it. And I just don't know why. It's crazy to me that they just have ignored this for so long. Maybe this fall. Maybe, I mean, we are due for a Mac Pro refresh.
Yeah, when is that happening? 2+ years later?
Yeah. It's not entirely Apple's fault. They've kind of been screwed over by Intel, because Intel sort of came to a crashing halt as they realized, oh, so that Moore's Law, it's not actually working out for us. Oops. So now they've moved to a 3-year cycle where there's no more TikTok. There's just iterations.
Okay.
So they've like dramatically stretched out their chipset timeline. They've even added new chipsets that are basically just the old chipset, but with a few improvements.
Michael.
So
I have a very important question to ask you.
Do you?
When's the new Mac Mini coming?
The fifth of never. No,
I want a new Mac Mini.
I think we might see one this year. The new Intel chipsets are out, so Apple's totally free to refresh the entire line if they want to. It's just a matter of timing.
It's like, not that hard. Keep the design the same. It's got nice, small, compact. Oh, yeah. Throw a new chip in, throw a new CPU and some faster memory and some upgraded SSDs.
Yeah, they're not going to change
it. By the way, with the last revision, that's what I think was a few years ago, did they ever move to the ePCI embedded SSD, or are they still using an external SSD drive, like with the enclosure and everything? You know what I'm talking about? Like how all the new Macs now have the embedded SSD chip that you can't easily upgrade.
I think it's still on the enclosure.
Because
it's really old.
Right, right.
The last revision was before they moved to that.
Because they could even potentially make it smaller if they moved to that new to the ePCI.
Yeah,
SSD,
where it's directly on the logic board. Yeah,
faster.
Yeah, once they moved it directly on the logic board, it made it way better. Yeah, they could easily move to that. They could make the Mac Mini this ridiculously tiny box that's barely larger than an Apple TV if they wanted to.
That'd be awesome. Would make a good Skype machine.
Oh yeah, well, and for everything else, really. But
kind of ridiculous. The whole notion that you want a computer just to run Skype is silly. But for podcasting, that's what people do.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really sure what Apple's pipeline looks like for hardware this year. I would assume we'll see refreshes for just about everything, and hopefully the new MacBook Pro looks like a MacBook. Hopefully that's actually happening this year.
Do you think it's gonna be one of those years where Apple gives us everything? Including iOS 10 with all the features we've ever wanted?
I think in terms of software it is, absolutely. I think we are going to get a lot of the things we've wanted for a long time.
My suspicion is that people care more about the software being really robust and good, more so than the hardware.
I think so.
Because there are more complaints overall about like so many issues with iOS, like the iPad needs a bespoke OS to deal with that, the extra size of the display that's not optimized. There's so many complaints about like the App Store ecosystem, iMessage lacking richness as far as messaging, comparable features to other messaging clients that are popular now. API limitations that people can't get around. There are so many things that people want from iOS.
I really do think we'll see all of that this year. Last year with iOS 9, it was basically about getting the platform back to stability, which they achieved. iOS 9 is probably the most stable version of iOS they've had in years. So iOS 10, I think, is just going to be feature after feature. They're going to announce all this stuff, and our jaws will never leave the floor.
Do you think when they announce OS 10.12 or whatever I guess that's the next logical
Mac
version.
OS 10.12.
Right, Mac OS. Do you think maybe this version or the next version at some point we will no longer have a CDs and DVDs icon in system preferences? Because it's still there. And I think the DVD player still ships. Yes, it's still included in El Capitan.
Oh,
why?
Boy.
We haven't had optical drives in a Mac in years. Why?
There is the Super Drive.
Yes. Why?
They still sell it.
Why?
Just in case you need to use one, you know.
Yeah. Where's the USB floppy drive?
I think they actually had one of those when they first got rid of the floppy drive.
They did for a while. You could buy one.
Yeah.
But again, it's just one of those, weird, we're in that weird transition period. You know what I mean? Like between major technology shifts.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is we've moved on to this kind of all digital thing, but there's a lot of people out there that don't buy into that. There's a lot of people out there that still use DVDs and CDs.
My dad still buys CDs.
Yeah. So, I mean,
and I don't begrudge people for not liking streaming music. There are a lot of disadvantages to it.
Yeah.
Lower bit rates, issues with, if you're in an area with poor cellular service, you can't stream music easily. Once you stop paying for streaming, you lose access to the music. There's all sorts of reasons why, and I don't begrudge people for that, but it does seem kind of funny though to me that we still have a CDs and DVDs icon in system preferences and it still ships with a DVD player. OS 10 ships with DVD player software when Macs don't even have an optical drive. Anyways, that's enough of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this year is kind of the make everyone happy year. Hopefully. I think.
Well, with Phil Schiller taking over for App Store stuff.
Yes. So that I think we're going to see the first changes to the App Store at WWDC. I think Phil Schiller's going to.
Upgrades? iOS upgrades? Trials? Maybe?
Maybe. I think Phil Schiller's going to get up there and he's going to say basically, now I've been put in charge of the App Store. I've taken time to see what developers are saying. I've taken time to see what customers are saying. And today I'd like to announce some changes we're making to the App Store to better serve our developers and our customers.
Yeah.
Like, funny. In fact, I bet it's going to be those exact words or something like it.
You know, it's funny. Apple has always had this loosey-goosey policy. No one really talks about this, but Apple's App Store policy is that they do not provide refunds, yet pretty much most of the time when somebody actually spends the time to email the App Store and complain about an app, they just go ahead and refund their money. And they don't consult the developer. There's no, like, it is entirely, your revenue, your life is entirely in Apple's hands. And if enough people complain, Apple will just refund those people and you lose all that money and you have no way of contacting those people or help being able to actually offer a solution, which is really sad.
Yeah.
Developers still can't respond to comments on the App Store.
Yeah.
They can't respond to reviews.
That's garbage.
Yeah. That's garbage. And it's unacceptable in 2016.
I think we're probably going to be pretty happy with what they announce in June. I have a feeling right now.
It's making me mad.
I don't even
develop on iOS, but it makes me mad for other people that try to make a living on the platform. It's
very frustrating right now for a lot of people out there. But I think the light is at the end of the tunnel. I think we are going to see some meaningful changes this year. And that'll continue through to next year. Like, there will be the stuff that Phil Schiller announces, and that might even be part of, like, iOS 9.4 or something, some kind of interim release that they do before iOS 10 that has a bunch of App Store fixes. And then iOS 10 will expand on that, perhaps. I think this will be an ongoing process, and they'll just continue to iterate on it. Get developer feedback, get customer feedback, and just continue improving it, because I think they finally realized that, yes, this is a big problem. We need to stabilize our ecosystem.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think be hopeful. I think change.
I'm trying to be. I'm really trying.
Change is in the wind, I think.
You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, and I'm joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this show, there are a few ways that you can do that. One of the best ways is to become a regular donator. You can do that by going to patreon.com/hologramradio. Check out some of the different benefits of becoming a donator. What that does is it actually helps not only cover our bandwidth, server costs, that sort of stuff, but what we're trying to do is build a network of really high quality shows with a diverse cast of people from different backgrounds, ethnicities, and different topics, from comedy to technology to podcasts about writing, interviews, all that sort of stuff. And so your money is actually going to be put to good use to help us create new content. So please do that. I cannot stress enough how much that really does help us. You can also go to hologramradio.org/sponsors and shop at Amazon, which I'm sure you already do. But if you're going to shop at Amazon and buy stuff from your wish list, why not use one of our links? We have Amazon UK, USA, and Canada. So just click one of those. There's no additional work needed on your part other than clicking those links and buying the same exact stuff you were already going to buy, except that we get a portion of the sale. You can subscribe to the show in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week, or your podcast player of choice. We're on Stitcher, and we are on TuneIn and now Google Play as well. If you're in iTunes, why not drop us a rating? That helps other people find the show. And if you do leave a rating, we will give you a personal shout out on a future episode of The Impromptu. So go and do that now. You can follow the show on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu or at Hologram Radio on Twitter if you'd like to keep up to date on all of the other great podcasts on this fine network. You can follow Michael at Zen Impulse. I'm Alex Knight at Zero Distraction. And we are on Facebook as well at Hologram Radio and Instagram. We are Hologram Radio Shows. And if you'd like to reach either Michael or myself for feedback, good or bad, you can send an email to theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.